Today is May 22nd, 2013, and this is episode number 205 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, troubadour at all. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
We need to get a troubadour theme just for you.
A troubadour theme, yes. That would be fantastic.
And an appropriate hat, because all troubadours should wear a hat, I think.
A fancy hat.
Oh, very fancy.
Yeah, fancy. Fancy hat. Something floppy and fancy.
With a big feather on it.
With a big feather, yes. The bigger the feather, the better, or something. I don't know. So, how you been? It's been a week since we recorded.
And we both managed to survive yet another week.
It's true. So, it's been a week. So, I'm guessing you've done 52 other podcasts in between now and then?
Yes, actually. It might have been 51. I think there's one that got canceled.
I see.
Yeah, but
you get regular checkups, right?
Oh, yes. I wear gloves, and I have this ointment.
That's good. But this is the only podcast that matters, of course, because this is the Apple Context Machine.
Tested clean for your pleasure.
Exactly. And it's been a busy week. It's been especially busy in the world of taxes, and Apple's been having some fun up on Capitol Hill. Why don't we just talk about that first?
I think that sounds awesome. So for those of you that aren't exactly sure what we're talking about, the U.S. Senate decided that they were going to have Apple come and testify in their ongoing investigation into the tax practices of large corporations and
U.S. multinationals.
There we go, U.S. multinationals. Big words like that make me sound smart.
So, like last week, it was HP and Microsoft, or maybe it might have been earlier than last week. But
it was last year, actually.
Oh, last year. Okay.
Yes.
Several. The point is that this isn't something that's targeting just Apple. Apple is merely the latest company to take part in these hearings.
Yes, although it sure seems like Apple was kind of singled out in the hearing.
They were singled out in the hearing, but the hearing was about them. So, yes. I mean, the other companies have testified, and the reality is that that the subcommittee, and really, of course, we mean the subcommittee staffers, say they just got through Apple's complex network of subsidiaries to have a report on the company.
Right, and the quick rundown is that Apple doesn't appear to be breaking any laws, but the Senate subcommittee really wishes Apple was paying more taxes.
Right. In particular, now it's actually kind of interesting, and I don't know where the truth lies on this. The subcommittee is accusing Apple of hiding profits from the U.S. Treasury, but it really seems to me that it would be much more appropriate to say that Apple is hiding profits from a variety of other countries, not the U.S.
I have a feeling that's probably a much better way to explain it. From what Apple's saying and from what the subcommittee knows, it looks like Apple is being pretty transparent with the United States government.
Right. It turns out that there are permanent IRS agents on Apple's premises conducting effectively a permanent audit.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, well, it is crazy.
When you think about the resources, it's just crazy because Apple can't be the only company where there are permanent IRS agents continually conducting investigations.
Or
audits.
And of course not. Not at that level. And Apple... All right, let's explain the nuts and bolts. Apple separates the money that's earned here in the United States from the money that's earned outside of the United States. So companies, the various aspects of Apple that are selling products in Europe, in Asia, South America, those are all being handled by foreign, wholly owned subsidiaries.
Right. So the money Apple is making outside the United States, by and large, is staying outside the United States.
Right. But the money that Apple makes in the United States, which is a lot, Apple is paying all relevant U.S. taxes, according to both the Senate committee, subcommittee, and according to Apple itself.
Right. So, in a manner of speaking, Apple was called into a hearing to be questioned about their tax practices that are in compliance with the law.
Right, but at the same time, Apple used, CEO Tim Cook in particular, used the opportunity of the hearing to ask the senators present to change the tax code, to actually make these things simpler so that Apple didn't need this vast network of subsidiaries that it uses, and to make it simpler for Apple to bring money earned outside the U.S. back into the U.S. And Tim Cook said that we understand this is going to mean that we're going to end up paying more taxes, but we think it'd be better for business, we think it'd be better for America, and we think it'd be better for Apple.
Right. And I'm glad he used the platform to present that.
Yeah.
And especially because had he not done that, I feel like the entire event would have been a colossal waste of time. And even still, I feel like it was, to a degree, a waste of taxpayer money. Because Apple was being questioned about known compliance.
Well... Yes and no. Well, keep in mind that part of the information that the subcommittee is gathering from both Apple and all the other multinationals that the subcommittee is questioning, that information will hopefully go towards changing the tax code.
Yes.
And from that standpoint, I don't think it was a waste of time. And from another standpoint, it wasn't a waste of time. Some of the members of the committee used their time to get Apple's feedback and input on how to change the tax code and why they needed to change the tax code.
Yes, and that's great. And I've been trying to figure out what exactly is it that really left a bad taste in my mouth about the whole thing. And it finally clicked. It's that Senators McCain and Levin, the day before the event, flat out accused Apple of
sheltering profits.
Yes, thank you, of sheltering profits. So they took this and they took an event that I think should have been a very straightforward, productive, healthy discussion and made it into an antagonistic event.
Well, they did, although not all the senators agreed with them.
True.
But there is money that's being sheltered. In particular, there is a subsidiary called Apple Operations International.
Out of Ireland.
Based in Ireland, yeah. They're incorporated in Ireland, and it's run by officers here in the States. But, you know, really, we're talking about, you know, Tim Cook and Peter Oppenheimer and other various Apple executives. I mean, anyway, the point is that the officers meet in the States, the money is kept in the States, and the records are kept in the States. So Apple has identified a massive loophole. Irish law says it matters where you do business, which in this case is the United States.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. law says it matters where you're incorporated, which is Ireland. And so Apple has decided that means that this company doesn't have to file taxes anywhere.
And it appears that that the laws support that right now.
Correct. But so Apple is using that, though, to shelter profits. The question to me is, from whom? Are they sheltering it from the U.S. or are they sheltering it from Ireland? And that actually, I mean, if the senators are saying they're sheltering it from the U.S., they're saying that, and there was $30 billion in profits generated by the subsidiary from 2009 to 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And if the senators are right, everyone agrees that Apple is obeying the law, but that is completely separate from whether or not profits are being sheltered from being taxed. And if Apple is legally sheltering money from being taxed, then the senators have a point.
True. But I think the bigger point is, as long as Apple is in compliance with the law, the bigger point is the laws need to change then.
Well, and that was really Apple's message. Apple's message is, we're complying with the law, so change the law. You know, if you don't like what we're doing, just change the law and make it work, because we'll comply with those new laws.
Which seems pretty amicable to me.
Well, it's pretty darn reasonable. And, you know, on top of this, let's not, this is philosophically, this is really important to me. You look at a company like GE. GE hasn't paid taxes in something like 10 years, like through a variety of shelters and tax breaks and all manner of loopholes. And Apple in 2012, fiscal 2012, which ends in September, paid $6 billion in taxes to the U.S. government. So, you know, if you want to talk about levels shades of gray, as it were, I think Apple's probably a slightly lighter shade of gray than other multinationals, but that still doesn't change the fact that the laws need to be changed.
True. And I think that's really the big takeaway, hopefully, out of all this, is that if the government wants to be able to collect taxes on more of the revenue that companies are generating, they need to look at the way the tax code is written so that they can do that.
Right, and they need to work out agreements with other countries that make some of these things possible. Now, some of those governments probably aren't going to be very interested in coming to an agreement. But I think what's happening right now is that Europe as a whole is getting pretty angry with Ireland. Because Ireland knows what it's doing. It knows how these laws have evolved and how they're being used by all these corporations, because Apple is not the only company to use the double Irish, which is what that technique we described is called.
Right.
Google is using it. That came out today. I think Microsoft is using it. Lots of companies use it because, you know, it's really clever.
It is. And if you are a publicly traded company and you are not looking at ways to save money and ultimately increase profits for the company, you are not being fiscally responsible to your shareholders.
Right. As a matter of fact, it wouldn't surprise me if shareholders could find something to be upset about the fact that Apple has paid any taxes here in the States. You know, and that's another issue. I mean, there's the ethical issue there. I think that Apple I think that Apple, by and large, is doing a pretty good job of doing what is best for shareholders and what is good for a corporation. Tim Cook spoke very specifically to the notion that companies that are, I forget his exact wording, but to take a slight variant on the Spider-Man approach, with great success comes great responsibility. And Tim Cook spoke to this specifically. He said, when corporations like Apple that have had massive success, they have increased responsibilities to the communities in which they operate, and to the societies in which they operate, and to the governments under which they operate. And I think that Apple has done a pretty good job of doing what's best as often as it possibly can. And now the company is saying, change the law so that we can do what's best, and it's even, and it's even better.
There's a lot of companies that wouldn't have said that.
No, yeah, a lot of people wouldn't have said that, because people, generally speaking, suck.
Generally speaking, yes, you're absolutely right.
And there's a lot of people out there who are very greedy. There's a lot of people who want something for nothing. There's a lot of people who feel that they don't owe anyone anything for anything. And and it's kind of funny. Dare I go here?
I'm sitting down. I'll just roll with it.
Senator Rand Paul, Tea Party darling, used his opening comments to lambast the Senate subcommittee for hauling Apple up and putting them on a show trial, and referred to the government as being a $4 trillion bully, picking on poor Apple, and that Apple should be praised and not belittled. How did he put it? It was belittled. Oh, gosh darn it. Berated. And there was another one. He very cleverly did some alliteration there. And it's funny because I felt very strongly that he was political grandstanding. That he didn't,
sure.
That he really wasn't coming to Apple's defense so much as he was looking for an opportunity to demonize the government, which is the general speaking Tea Party line. All government is bad, and all there should be no taxes, and I'm certainly
which
being
then, which then adds some irony to the fact that he's a senator.
Well, in my opinion, true, but you can certainly argue that change has to be brought from within. But whatever, to me, that Tea Party message stands in contrast to Tim Cook's message of corporate responsibility and corporate citizenship, and with great success comes great great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's frustrating to see Senator Paul try to slap an Apple logo on his anti-government message when Apple's own leadership was actually there to say that corporations like us have responsibilities to pay taxes, and we want you to fix the tax code.
When I look at what Apple's paying in taxes, and I'll use GE as a comparison since we talked about them earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The big problem isn't so much, I think, that Apple can keep money outside the United States, but that companies like GE can find ways to just not pay taxes at all.
Right, and GE is by no means alone in doing so. They just happen to be really good at it.
Right, and I'm singling out GE not because I'm saying they're the only company doing this, but because we just happened to mention them earlier.
Right, and let's not dismiss the fact that the things that Senators Levin and McCain accused Apple of doing, Apple is doing, but they're just doing it outside the U.S., I mean, Apple generated billions of dollars in sales in Britain, and paid a paltry couple of million in taxes because they are using a complex network of subsidiaries to put most of those profits in Ireland, where they don't have to pay much in taxes on it. And the same thing for the rest of Europe, same thing for parts of Asia. You know, other countries have been upset about this for a while. These are not the first accusations to be leveled towards Apple. And it seems like Apple is not doing them in the U.S. Apple has not shifted all its IP to the Cayman Islands, for instance, and then booked all of its profits there. Apple has not done that for its U.S. sales. But Apple is doing some of those things outside the U.S. And that, you know, it seems like Apple needs to apply the great success and great responsibility lesson outside the U.S. as well.
Yeah, so in that respect, we're back to Apple being called to task for complying with the law in the United States.
Right.
Which, to me, is just horribly frustrating, because that really took away from what should have been a very positive look at necessary tax reform.
Okay, but then I don't want to beat this dead horse, but to the point that the senators are making, that the money that's being hidden in Ireland, I'm sorry, the money that's being sheltered in Ireland, they're saying is money that should have gone through the U.S. system.
Okay, then fix the law so that it does.
Yeah, well, all right, true enough.
Yeah.
True enough. And that's absolutely what they need to do. The underlying point to all of this is that the U.S. corporate tax code is broken. It's not working. And the proof in this pudding is the fact that it was cheaper for Apple to borrow money, to borrow $17 billion just to give it back to the shareholders, than it was for Apple to bring the money that they've earned outside the U.S. back into the U.S. It was that is
substantially cheaper.
They saved billions of dollars they saved by doing this.
Right. To the point that had Apple brought that money into the United States instead of borrowing it, they would have been acting in a fiscally irresponsible manner, and I think shareholders would have been inclined to file a class action lawsuit against the company for acting incompetently with their money.
Right. Absolutely. And that all of this is the case is the proof that the system is not working. The U.S. corporate tax code does not work. Now, where it needs to be changed is certainly open to debate. You know, those on the fiscally conservative side want there to be zero corporate taxes, period. And those on the progressive side want for corporations to pay out the nose. And somewhere between those two is probably something that works. Apple, for instance, Tim Cook specifically said, we don't want a 0% tax. We don't think that makes sense, but it needs to be reasonable. And he asked for all corporate loopholes. They're called the tax expenditures. It's just
it's a nice word.
Yeah, for loopholes. He wants all of the corporate tax loopholes to be eliminated. He wants the corporate tax rate to be lowered so it's largely revenue neutral, meaning that that the U.S. government will still end up bringing in the same amount of money. And then he wants a reasonable tax on the foreign profits to be levied. And he was asked specifically by one of the senators, how much should that tax be? And he wouldn't specify. He said, we don't want it to be zero, but it should probably be a single-digit number, and he didn't specify. So somewhere between 1% and 9%. I'm guessing it's probably in the middle. He probably wants a 5% tax rate for foreign profits.
Which would be far more reasonable than 35%, which I believe is what it is right now.
And would be far more reasonable than 0%, too.
Sure.
And, you know, 9% even. 9% would certainly keep the U.S. competitive on these issues. 9% would be would probably be a good bar for other countries to basically sort of match. so that, you know, they stop competing quite so much to try to, you know, that's a complex issue, but oh, what was my point, Jeff? Hate it when I do that.
I believe you're going down the path of if we could get some parity between countries for taxation.
Yeah.
That it would make it far more palatable for companies to move their money around for productive uses as opposed to simply trying to shelter it.
Right. I wasn't going there, but that is a very great point to make. So let's definitely go with that
we'll
point.
We'll roll with it?
We'll roll with that point.
All right.
There you have it. So it remains to be seen what's going to come out of this. There are all sorts of politics at play. Like I say, the progressive elements want one thing. Conservative elements want another thing. Most corporations want, you know, more towards the conservative side. I think Tim Cook's voice saying that we don't want it to be 0%. We want it to be a reasonable tax rate for these foreign profits. That's kind of a rare note to come out of corporate America. But then again, it speaks to his message about corporate responsibility to the societies in which they operate.
Yes, and it sure looks to me like Tim Cook wants Apple to be a model company.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the things, you know, it's always driven both of us nuts that Apple gets targeted for working conditions when Apple is doing more than any other U.S. company to provide good working or to ensure that their outsourcers are providing good working conditions. You know, and you know, Green Pierre companies. Apple gets dinged all the time when they tend to be the leader in whatever it is that they're being dinged for, or at least one of the leaders.
Yes, which on one hand makes sense because they're visible.
Right.
But on the other hand, come on, it's not fair. Why when Apple was in the news a lot for problems at the Foxconn factories, and Apple was openly talking about the things that they were doing to help improve working conditions.
Right.
Why were we not seeing HP held up to that same standard?
Or Dell.
Or
Motorola Mobility.
Right. Because they're all using the same factories, yeah. and presumably workers in all the same conditions.
Yes. Of course, you know what? The flip side of... I don't know. It's such a... That's... It also can't be ignored that Apple absolutely, at least, it seemed. Boy, talk about trying to have your cake and eat it too. It seemed very strongly that Apple stepped up its efforts to improve things once the spotlight was being shined on the company, even though Apple was already doing more than most of their companies to begin with. So, you know, maybe there was some good that came out of that. But that spotlight was never shined on any of the competition.
No. No, it was not.
Ever.
And that's a point that causes me frustration.
Yeah, me too. Me too, my friend. Me too, me too. So there you have it. It remains to be seen what's going to come out of of these hearings. There is a good chance that the status quo will be maintained. There is certainly a lot of lobbying power in maintaining the status quo. A lot of companies make enormous amounts of money with the status quo.
Yes, they do.
So, you know, it really does remain to be seen what's done with this. But I'm hoping that Europe is going to get a house in order. And that the U.S. will simplify things and get some of this money. You know, there's $1.7 trillion being held offshore. $1.7 trillion.
And of money.
70 or 80% of that is by, like, you know, 30 or 40 companies.
Yes. Now, realistically, how much of that money would come back in the United States? Because if it did, if all of it came in, wouldn't that mean all of that money is leaving other countries?
Well, Yeah, it would leave those other countries, but right now it's largely sitting around. It's just sitting there. So it's sitting in a bank in the Caymans. It's sitting in banks in Ireland. It's sitting in banks in other tax shelters, and nothing's really being done with it except for any loaning that the banks are doing based on those monies. So by bringing the money back into the States, the very least thing that'll happen is that a good chunk of that money is going to go back to shareholders. Mm-hmm. In the form of dividends and cash buybacks. That's what happened the last time we had a tax holiday. I might mention, by the way, that Tim Cook very specifically said, we don't want a temporary tax holiday. We want a permanent solution to this. Right? We want this to be fixed going forward, not another temporary tax holiday. Because what happened the last time we did a temporary tax holiday is the arguments that were used for that temporary tax holiday, which made it temporarily cheaper for companies to bring a bunch of money back into the States, is that that money all went to executive bonuses and shareholder dividends and share buybacks.
So it didn't really go into the economy.
Well, it did go into the economy. Shareholder dividends are money that gets to get spent. Even executive bonuses.
Things.
Yeah, they buy yachts and they buy mansions and stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So it was put back to work, but the argument that was used to sell it was that this money was going to be used to expand infrastructure and to invest in capital expenditures.
And that didn't happen.
It didn't happen at all. But that money was brought back. It was put to use again. It was put back into the economy one way or another. There's a fantastic argument that some people will make that the best use for it is for shareholder dividends, because it does end up being spent. But companies like Apple, some of that $1.7 trillion would go to new capital expenditures. Some of it. And that would be good. And if a lot of it went back to shareholders, and even if a lot of it went to make a few executives even wealthier, that money is still going to be put to more use than it's being put sitting in the Cayman Islands and Ireland.
That's a very good point.
And that's what we want. We want to see that money put back to use.
Yeah. And so we need some sort of change that makes it reasonable for companies to bring the money in.
Yep.
So that it can be used.
Yep.
Yeah, having it just sit locked away, that may work great for Scrooge McDuck, but the rest of the economy.
And those banks are certainly loaning that money, right? You know, so it is still being put to some kind of use, but it's not as good as if it's being spent. It's being used to buy things, to build things, to make things happen. And not only that, but we kind of want that stuff to happen in our country, because it's our country. Just like, of course, right, the Irish would like that money to stay in Ireland, because, you know, it's their country. It's all
right.
Well,
and that's
good.
Why they made the tax laws that they have.
Yeah.
What, like 50 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's been paying off for them.
Yeah, and the same thing for the Caribbean countries that have provided tax shelters. I mean, you know, there's definitely a reason why that stuff has happened. They want the money sitting in their banks. But, you know,
right,
we're talking about U.S. companies, and we want that money put back to work here in the States. And, you know, really, the all boats rise with the rising tide. How's it go? Tim Cook actually said that, too. All boats lift with the rising tide, I think, is what he said. You know, it's the rest of the world will not suffer if the U.S. economy improves.
Right, right. So make changes, Congress.
Yeah, make some changes. Let's get this stuff working. Status quo is broken. Let's get this stuff working.
Yes, I agree.
Alrighty. Let's talk about Samsung.
What? There's something about Samsung we could discuss.
There's always something about Samsung to discuss these days.
So what's on your mind, Brian?
Well, it was a piece you covered for us. You did some coverage on was it Smart App 2013? What's that contest that they're running called? Let's look.
I believe it's Smart App. And so the contest, what they're doing with this contest is they are divvying up $800,000 in cash prizes to go to developers that write apps that take advantage of the social aspects.
Group Play. It's the Group Play API.
Yes, the Group Play API. That's part of Samsung's additions to Android on their own smartphones. So this is a Samsung specific thing. And what they're trying to do is get developers excited enough about writing for Android that they actually start writing applications as opposed to focusing just on iOS.
It's called the Samsung Smart App Challenge 2013.
Right. So if you're an Android developer or want to be an Android developer and you want to throw your hat in the ring and see if you can get some of this $800,000 pot, then you have to write an application that takes advantage of a very specific feature set in the Galaxy S4.
It's the GS4 only, too.
Yes. And hope for the best.
And hope for the best, yeah. Of course, you're not going to have a lot of competition, so, you know, you got a shot at some of that money. But it was funny.
You know what problem I have with this?
Do tell.
This, to me, feels a lot like the issue that just bothers me so much in the graphic design world, where professionals are asked to work on spec, meaning do all this hard work for free, give it to us, and hey, it just may pay off, and it's good visibility for you, so you should be glad for it. Now, in this case, I know it's a little different, because regardless of whether or not these developers win part of the $800,000, they can still sell their app.
Right, that's true.
But and still.
I have been wondering why you took the angle you took for the coverage, and that now makes a lot of sense. You were focusing on the sort of chance of getting the payoff aspect of it.
Right. And I really have a problem with that.
Sure.
If you're entering a contest where it's just a contest to win something, fine. But if you are entering a contest where you have to give away what you do for a living, I have a problem with that.
Right. And so, all right, before we actually get to the Samsung aspect of this, let's put this contest into a little bit of context. And that context is that other companies have done a very good job of supporting developers. Microsoft in particular has always done a great job of providing money to developers, especially if they're looking to get something off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Apple doesn't do. In large part, that's probably because Apple doesn't need to, especially with the App Store. But what Samsung is doing here by trying to seed the field with some prize money is at least similar to what Microsoft has always done such a good job of doing. But your point about effectively asking developers to develop on spec is certainly a valid point. Anything to say about that?
No.
All right.
Because I want to give you a chance to get on your soapbox.
All right. I'm going to jump on my soapbox. So I've been thinking, like, I kept mentioning this in our morning meetings. I especially kept mentioning this when you and I were talking, that, like, you know, Samsung has delusion to grandeur. It's like, nah, you know, that's just not quite it. You know, it's like, I wanted to write a piece along these lines, and there was something about what Samsung was doing that just kept bugging me. And then when the GS4 event took place, the unpacked of weird GS4 launch event,
that was creepy. Like, I still have moments where I have to go cry in the shower over that. Just creepy.
It was a creepy event, and we'll have a link to our coverage of that event in the show notes. And that was back in, I think, March or early April, late March. I think it was late March. At that point, Samsung didn't mention Google once during their hour-long event launching their new Android flagship smartphone. They didn't mention Android once. They didn't mention Google Now once. Google Now, that I think is the killer app for Android. That, you know, in my opinion, Samsung should have been out there going, oh my God, we have the best Google Now platform on the planet. You know, this is the phone you should have for Google Now. They didn't mention any of these things. Instead, they focused on features that they had added on top of Android for this device.
You know, I'm kind of seeing a pattern here, and I'll use Amazon as an example. We have companies that are taking the Android code base, skinning it and modifying it for their own needs, and then not mentioning that they're using Android.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, HTC is a company that added some things to Android, but they still at least acknowledged that they were using Android. Motorola Mobility is always, of course, they're owned by Google now, but you know, they certainly promote their devices as Android devices. Samsung, though, didn't mention, like I said, didn't mention Google, didn't mention Android, and it was immediately apparent that Samsung believes that it can produce a Samsung-centric ecosystem, and that people are going to care about these Samsung features, and you know, oh my God, they can't wait to use the Samsung features. And so at that point, my delusions of grandeur angle kind of turned into a delusions that we can have an ecosystem angle. But even still, that wasn't right. You know, it's like I didn't have that moment of clarity when that would allow me to write something. And then finally this happened. The Smart App Challenge 2013 happened. It finally hit me. Samsung has delusions of relevance.
And that's a fantastic way of putting it.
They have mistaken their incredible success for relevance. And it's funny. It's funny, really, is what it is. It's just funny.
I find it interesting, much in the way that I find Amazon's use of Android interesting, where the company that created the foundation for these products, meaning Android,
Google.
Wow, I really did that. Wow, yes,
so
Google.
Pretty.
Yeah, at least I've got that going for me. Yeah, Google, the company that laid the foundation for these products, is, in a manner of speaking, getting sidelined while companies take what they've done and do their own rebranding to really highlight whatever it is that they're trying to show off. In this case, the Galaxy S4, or it could be the Kindle Fire, HD, whatever. But
did you let the bongo playing cat in the TMO Tower Central again?
Yes, I did. And I really, really thought that I had the bongo mutes turned on.
Right. So they do. But, you know, Amazon, of course, has taken that an extra step, and they forked Android. And so, you know, they don't put any Google services on their Kindle Fire HD or Kindle Fire. I mean, that, you know, to me, not only should the Kindle Fire and Kindle Fire HD lines be excluded from Android tablet sales. It should be looked at on the, as their own line item if you're going to look at market share. But sure. They also represent Amazon giving a big middle finger to Google.
Yes, and I think that's exactly what Samsung is doing as well. But they're not even...
I think they're positioning themselves to do it.
Ooh, I like that.
They're
positioning themselves
to
do it.
Yeah, they think that they can build this ecosystem, and they think that I'm certainly not the only one who thinks this. The thought is that that Samsung is either going to fork Android themselves, or they're going to move all of their development to Tizen, which is the open source Linux-based mobile operating system that's being backed by Google. I'm sorry, by Intel and Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're definitely going to release some Tizen devices, and if they're really successful, they would naturally move more towards that than Android. But I don't think Tizen is going to be successful. As I wrote in that piece, I think Tizen's going to end up being an expensive joke for everyone concerned. And I don't know that they're going to fork Android, but they certainly could. But what we saw happen at Google I/O was the de-Samsunged version of the GS4 that offers a stock Android experience. So clearly Samsung is cooperating with that. So, you know, maybe relationships between those two companies are just fine right now.
Well, from Samsung's perspective, it would make sense to work with Google for the we'll call it the Android clean phone.
Yeah.
Because not only are they getting to sell the phone the way they want, but they can get additional hardware sales from Google selling it the way they want.
Right.
So Samsung is still making money off of this.
Exactly. And plus, you know, the this way Google will have to do the distribution, so you know they don't have to muck about with the actual sales or anything. And that's all fine and dandy.
You know what I would do if I were an Android user like that? I would buy the Samsung version of the phone, which costs less, and then root the phone and install the version of Android that Google is offering on their version. Save money in the process.
True, but one of the great things about Google selling this is you know that all future updates are going to work on it.
True, but the people that I think would really pay attention to that are more likely to also be the people that would think, hey, you know, I can save a couple $100, root the thing, and have exactly what Google was going to sell me anyhow.
True enough. That is true enough. And by cheaper, you mean that you can buy it with a subsidy.
Right.
It's actually roughly the same price.
Right. But with the subsidy, you're paying less initially.
Yeah, you're paying less with that upfront cost.
Right.
So in the meanwhile here, Samsung looks at all these tens of millions of smart devices, smartphones that they sell every quarter. They look at their growing market share in the smartphone market. They look at their growing share of profits in the smartphone market. And they pat themselves on the back, and they say that it's because we're so awesome. And I think that they are sadly mistaken, because at the end of the day, they are beholden to Google. They are beholden to Android. They don't control Android. And anybody else, any other company can come along and make a better device than they do. And, you know, they'll be just another Android OEM.
I think you totally nailed it when you said essentially that market share doesn't equate to relevance.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's, and let don't misunderstand me. Samsung is a really good hardware company. They do a lot of really interesting and really cool things on the hardware side. They are leaders in the chip business. And
yes,
they are leaders in the display business. They are the, you know, most of the components that go into their own devices are made by them, right? So, you know, unlike Apple, which is outsourcing all, almost everything from you know, a huge network of third party component suppliers, most of the products, most of the components going into the high end phones in particular are all made by Samsung, and Samsung's doing the manufacturing. And there's a lot to be said for that. That is quite the accomplishment. Samsung has made a lot of money selling smartphones. And other than Apple, they're the only company making money selling Android devices at the very least. And that's all great. Those are all important accomplishments. No one can take that away. But they're differentiators that they do have. The TouchWiz interface. The S-Voice, please. S-Voice and S-Search and S-Translate. The video stopping when you look away, being able to answer the phone without touching it. You know, no one cares about any of that stuff. That's not selling phones, or if it is selling phones, it's not keeping anybody using the phones, because no one's using those things.
You know, and those features, those are all Galaxy S4 features, if I'm correct.
Yes. Well, I think S Voice and S-Translate, I think that those are available in other TouchWiz devices, too.
Oh, okay. It's hard to keep up because we have so many phones. Where was I going with that? Oh, yes. So if these features are so great, why... if these features are so great for the average consumer, why are they not selling more of the phones than they are?
That's true. They took, 28 days to sell 10 million units of the GS4?
Yes, and I'm wondering, does that mean actual sales or units pushed out into the channel?
It's a combination, for sure.
Okay, which means that actual sales are lower.
True, but when Apple reports sales, they also include channel inventory. It's just there's a much higher mix of direct sales because so many of Apple sales are direct. You know,
but my point is the actual units sold isn't going to be as high as that number that Samsung said.
Correct, but when Apple says it sold 5 million iPhone 5s in the first 2 days, those are actual sales for sure.
Yes,
but when Apple reports its quarterly numbers, those are shipments just like this 10 million figure from Samsung. It's just it's a higher percentage of actual sales included from Apple.
Right. So Apple's number, actual sales number, would be lower, or is lower.
Right. Yeah. Can I point out a little bit of minutia here?
I wouldn't have it any other way.
When some mainstream reporters have been actually trying to talk about this point, that Apple also reports shipments in its quarterly numbers and not just sales. And they say that, you know, for instance, Apple said that they had 6 weeks of inventory in the channel, and that was an increase from 4 weeks of inventory in the prior quarter. So there's like 2 million units that were shipped and not sold. But what they don't point out is the fact that the same thing was true last quarter, and those the units that were sold to customers from last quarter's channel inventory were not counted in this quarter's numbers. So it's a floating bit. Apple sales are much closer to actual sales than, say, a company like Samsung.
Okay, that's actually a really good point, which is why I love that you get into the minutia.
Thanks. So the point is that Samsung's differentiating features are hardware features. They're not software features. Samsung doesn't do software well. Samsung has never done software well. The best thing that Samsung has ever done in terms of software is copying Apple. They had obviously there was the big court case that they lost, where they were convicted of copying Apple, and Apple laid out very clearly a decision making process within Samsung where they said that their devices had to look and feel more like Apple devices, and they set about to do that. That's the best thing they've ever done. And that's not, yes. that's not a great foundation to lie all your hopes on. You know, relevance in the smartphone market to me is a software issue. Google is very relevant. Android is very relevant. Apple is very relevant. Even Microsoft is relevant. Samsung is not. Samsung is just another hardware maker.
You know, bringing up Microsoft, I think that's an excellent point, because they don't have the market share.
Right.
But they do have a very compelling software interface for their phones now. And I agree, that gives them relevance in the market.
It does. It absolutely does. You know, and God forbid for Samsung that that Google ever wake up to the fact that it owns Motorola. You know, it actually owns this hardware company. And if Google, you know what just occurred to me?
Oh, do tell.
This is interesting to me. You know, we've long assumed that Google paid $12.5 billion for Motorola for the software patents, right? For software mm-hmm. and hardware patents, of course. It just occurred to me that purchase could also be the Billy Club to have swinging behind their back. Don't mess with this, because if you do, you know, we'll throw all our weight behind Motorola.
Huh, that's a very interesting incentive to not screw with Google.
Yeah, could be.
If you're an Android product maker.
Yeah. But, you know, should Google decide at some point that they want to get really serious about Android hardware because they're either dissatisfied with their OEMs, because Apple it ends up taking the perception lead again, Samsung would be at a severe disadvantage because they don't do software well.
No, Google would be in a much better position because they could come closer to the whole package deal like Apple has. I mean, can you imagine if Google went to Motorola Mobility and said, okay, so here's what we have for the next version of Android. We want you to make what you think is the coolest phone to run on this. And we're going to have part of our software team working with you so that we can optimize software and hardware like Apple does to come up with the coolest Android phone. Go.
Right.
I think Google could, Motorola Mobility could come up with a phone that could just blow people's socks off.
Yeah, they could. And instead, you know, Google's kept Motorola at arm's length and has been over backwards to make sure that every other OEM is treated just as fair, if not more fairly than their own. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's a mistake, but whatever. It's not my company.
You know, that might be tactical. So that when they get to the point where they decide, all right, we're going to go all out with our own phone,
yep.
They have a proven and documented track record of working with and supporting other Android device makers.
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose so. I don't know. Long story short, Samsung has delusions of relevance. They're just a hardware maker. They're just like Dell, Acer, Asus, HP. You know, they're just, you know, they're licensing an OS. They're licensing an OS and packaging it up, and their current dominance is predicated on always being able to do that better than other companies. And as we've seen in the PC industry, those crowns shift.
Yes. And I just have to point out, I find it incredibly funny that after we do a long story,
mm-hmm.
we say, long story short.
That's
and
true.
We wrap up. Why don't we just say, long story long?
Yeah, long story still long. Long story summated briefly.
Yeah, that would be more accurate. But we say, long story short. And
well, to be fair, I say that. You're smarter than me.
I don't know if I'm smarter than you. I do get more text messages than you.
You're certainly more popular and more politic than me. Orders of magnitude.
Yes, but but you're the musician and songwriter, the novel writer.
Yes, well, be that as it may, let's take it out. I think this is a good point to end.
I think so, because at some point people are going to get tired of listening to me sing the praises of Brian Chaffin.
Yes,
about town.
Exactly. And they'll see through your nonsense.
And speaking of nonsense, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me online at Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamet at both places.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. You can check out my personal blog at geektells.com. It's geek, T-E-L-L-S. And my app.net handle, and I'll be honest, I'm not using app.net a whole lot yet, but I'm Brian Chaffin there. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.